Today's shiur is Masechta Sukkah Daf Chav Tes, and we will begin on Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph on the third line. Amar Rava. Rava teaches us Mani Mishtaya B'Metalalta. A person may bring into the sukkah utensils, cups that he uses to drink, and as Mufarshim explained, the point is that even after he uses them for drinking, they get dirty. Since a person commonly keeps on reusing his drinking cups, he can leave them in the sukkah. Mani mechla, however, eating utensils, bar metalalta, should be taken outside of the sukkah. Machloikis, Rashi, and Tosfos, how to understand this line of the Gemara. Rashi explains that mani mechla means that the plates that were used to eat on, as soon as they're finished being used, should not remain in the sukkah, because it's not covered for the sukkah to leave dirty plates in the sukkah, and they should be immediately removed. Tosfos, however, explains that the Gemara is referring to pots and pans in which the food is cooked in. They should not be brought into the sukkah, because it's not covered for the sukkah to bring such pots and pans into the sukkah. However, says the Mishnah Berurah, if one normally has like nice serving pots that he brings to the table, that may be brought to the sukkah. The Aruch HaShulchan says, based on the same reasoning, one should be careful not to wash netilas yudayim in the sukkah, because it's not covered to the sukkah to wash your hands in the sukkah. They should be washed outside of the sukkah. Of course, the Aruch HaShulchan does say that that does not apply to negel vasa. One sleeping in the sukkah is allowed to wash negel vasa, because you have to wash negel vasa right next to your bed. The Mefarshim explained that what is the basis of the machloikas between Rashi and Tosfos. So the Yad Dovid explains that according to Rashi, Rav is coming to teach us a new halacha. Rav is coming to teach us that the sukkah should be treated in a special, respectful manner, and therefore dirty plates should not remain in the sukkah. However, according to Tosfos, the Yad Dovid explains, the Gemara's Rav is teaching us, Teishu kein deduru. You should live in the sukkah just like you live all year round, and just like people don't bring pots and pans to the dining room table, they should not be brought to the sukkah. The Paiskim also discuss if it is permissible to have a garbage can in the sukkah. So certainly according to Tosfos, that we just explained, the concept is Teishvu kein deduru. So if one may have a garbage can in his home, he's allowed to have a garbage can in the sukkah. However, according to the Rashi, that says that we have to be extra careful in what we bring into the sukkah, perhaps even if we have a garbage can in our home, we may not have a garbage can in our sukkah. The Kaf HaChayim, based on this Gemara, says, if we have to be so careful in the plates and the pots and the pans that we bring into the sukkah, certainly we should also be careful in what we say and how we speak in the sukkah. Although the Mata Ephraim says that even though, of course, one must be careful how he speaks and what he says all year round, wherever he is, and certainly in the sukkah, however, says the Mata Ephraim, one should not refrain from having normal conversation in the sukkah. Teishvu kein deduru. We should live in the sukkah just like we live at home. At home, we spend time around the table having discussion. So may we have around the sukkah table. Continues the Gemara. Chatzva v'shochel, earthenware jugs and a pail of water, bam metalalta, should be kept outside of the sukkah. And the Mefarshim ask, if this is the halacha, didn't we just learn a Mishnah that Rabbi Gamliel brought up to the sukkah his jug of water, and here we're saying that a jug of water should not be brought? So the number of answers given. One answer is that jug of metal water was made out of metal, which may be brought up to the sukkah. Here we're talking, as Rashi points out, we're talking about if it's made out of cheres, out of earthenware, which in general the Paiskim say we should try to avoid bringing earthenware utensils to the sukkah. Another answer, as we've been explaining, if it's a type of a pitcher which was normally brought to the sukkah, that may be brought to the sukkah, that's not considered a bezayin to the sukkah. Sharga, a lamp, metalalta, may be brought into the sukkah. Vamrilei, another say bam metalalta, and must be kept outside the sukkah. Says the Gemara v'loy pligi, there's really no machlokes between these brises. Hab sukkah gdoila, in a large sukkah, you're allowed to bring a candle. Hab sukkah ktana, in a small sukkah, you may not bring a candle. And again, there's machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. What's the pshat about a candle? Rashi learns that with a small sukkah, the candle serves to diminish the size of the sukkah, and as we've been learning, the minimum size of a sukkah is zayin al zayin tefachim, so therefore we have to be careful not to diminish the size of the sukkah. Tosfos, however, says the concern is that maybe the sukkah will be burnt, chas v'shalom, with the candle in it. The nafkamina between Rashi and Tosfos is, according to Tosfos, the concern is only on a candle that's on. If it's off, there's obviously no concern for fire. According to Rashi, if the concern is it diminishes the size of the sukkah, then it doesn't make a difference if it's on or off. On the other hand, if the candle is not fixed in its place, so according to Tosfos, it makes no difference. If there's a concern of a fire, that's the concern. According to Rashi, if it's not fixed in a certain spot, so then we don't have to be concerned that it will diminish the size of the sukkah and may be brought into even a small sukkah. We learned in the Mishnah, Yordu Geshamim, if rain falls into the sukkah, he may leave in the sukkah. Tana, we learned in the Braisa, how much rain is it considered enough rain that people should have to leave the sukkah? Mishatisruch hamikveh shogrisin. When the porridge made out of beans is ruined from the rain, one may leave the sukkah. Machloikis, what is considered what does the Gemara mean here? The smack learns that this is a shear that applies even if one is not eating porridge. This Chazal established, says the smag, is the amount of rain that it's considered that one should leave the sukkah. The Tar, however, disagrees, and the Tar says that it's only if you're eating porridge. If you're eating another food, we look at the amount of rain that would ruin that food. According to the Tar, when the Braisa here says the shear of rain that ruins the porridge, is I don't know what amount of rain will ruin this food, I use porridge as the model. But if I know exactly what amount of rain will ruin this food, then we should look at each food separately. And certainly, it's not only rain, if it's snowing, or there's other issues involved, then we look at how those elements will affect the rain. Abaye was sitting in front of Rav Yosef in the sukkah, Noshu Zeika, the wind was blowing, and Kamaisit Savusa, and splinters of wood from the schach fell on the food. Omlar Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef said, Panali Mani Mahacha, take my utensils from here, I'm leaving the sukkah. Omlar Abaye, Votanam Shetisruch Hamikvah, didn't we learn that you only leave the sukkah when it's raining that heavy that the food gets ruined, that the porridge gets ruined? Amalei, l'didi, kim danina datoi, since I'm very fickle, and anything like this disturbs me, t'day shetesuch hamak redomili, it's considered like the food is ruined, and I may leave the sukkah. Mefarshim explained, didn't we learn that the halach is that a mitzvah potem in a sukkah? So if this rain coming down disturbed Rav Yosef, why wasn't he allowed to leave the sukkah? So Mefarshim explained that Abaye drew a distinction between when somebody began the meal versus had not begun the meal versus when somebody was in the middle of the meal. And he thought that since Rabbi Yosef was already in the middle of the meal, it was improper for him to leave the sukkah. And that's why Abaye said, how could you leave the sukkah? And Rabbi Yosef said, this bothers me, and I fall into the category of mitzvah, and I may leave the sukkah. Tan Rabbanan. If somebody was eating in the sukkah, and he leaves the sukkah to go back into his home, He does not have to go back into his home once it stops to rain, once he began the meal inside his house. And there's machloikus. Why? Some of Farshim explain because it's a category of mitztayer, to stop the meal, start the meal, it's mitztayer, and therefore he doesn't have to go back to the sukkah. Others say, as we've been explaining, teishvu ke ein teduru. A person doesn't go from one place to the next place when he's eating a meal in his house, and therefore he doesn't have to leave his home. However, the Mishnah Brura says, when does this halacha apply? It only applies if somebody left the sukkah and already began eating his meal inside the house, and then after he began to eat, it stopped to rain, so the Gemara is teaching us that he doesn't have to go back into the sukkah. However, if he did not yet begin his meal, even though he went into his home, he should go back to continue the meal in the sukkah. However, says the Gemara, Yoshin Tachas Sukkah, if somebody was eating and sleeping in the sukkah, Yod Gishamim, it begins to rain, and he goes back into his house, Ein Matrich Noisei Lal Atchior. He doesn't have to go back into his house, Atchior. We'll see in a moment what Atchior means. Here, the Mishnah Brura, however, says that we could be more makel. And the Mishnah Brura says that if somebody takes his linen into the house because it started to rain, he does not have to, and then even before he went to sleep, it stops to rain, he doesn't have to go back out to the sukkah. He can remain sleeping inside for the rest of the night. The Paiskim also speak about what is the shear of rain and when a person's allowed to go into the house. And it seems that most Paiskim agree that the shear of rain to allow one to go into the house is less than the shear of rain to allow you to go into the house in the middle of a meal. Because even the smallest amount of rain makes it difficult and uncomfortable to sleep, and one may go into the house. I saw another shaila. Let's say someone was learning in the sukkah. As we were learning, you have to do everything in the sukkah during sukkahs. And he was learning in the sukkah, and then it started to rain. So he leaves the sukkah to go inside to learn. Does he have to go back inside? So the Lechem Yehuda says as follows. If the person was learning a daf yomi, for example, so he's learning a blat of Gemara, so if he started to learn inside the house because it was raining, he does not have to go back into the sukkah. However, if he was learning not a specific shir, he just Baruch Shem, sitting and learning, if it stops to rain, he should go back into the sukkah when it stops to rain. Iboilu, so they asked, how do we understand the word Atchior? Do we spell it with an ayin, which means until he wakes up, or Atchior, do they spell it with an aleph, until it becomes light? Toshma, so the Brice that says, Atchior v'yala murashachar. So ask the Gemara, Tarti, this Brice that gives us these two times are self-contradictory. Yor means when it becomes light. Amud HaShachar is much earlier than that. So it can't be both or Amud HaShachar. El Eima, how must we understand this Braisa? Atchiyor, until he wakes up, V'yal Amud HaShachar. And also have Amud HaShachar. So what the Braisa is saying is that we wait for the later time, whichever comes later. If he wakes up before Amud HaShachar, he can remain in the sukkah. It can remain indoors if he's sleeping. And moreover, even if it's after the Amudah Shachar, if he's still sleeping, he does not have to go back into, be woken up and go into the sukkah. So the Mishnah taught us a mashal. Before we go further, just to review one other aspect of halacha, very relevant aspect of halacha, and that is the first night of sukkahs. That even though we're learning now, that if it's raining, a person does not have to go into, does not have to sit in the sukkah, or if he's sitting in the sukkah, he may leave the sukkah. Says the halacha is the first night, as we learned earlier in this parak, there's a gzeirus shava, which compares sukkahs to Pesach. Just like Pesach, the first night we have to eat matzah, sukkahs the first night we have to eat in the sukkah. And therefore, if chas v'shalom, it's raining, The Mishnah Berurah says that you should wait, and he says we should wait till Chatzos to hope that the rain will stop. If it doesn't stop by Chatzos, then one should go in, make Kiddush, and eat a kezayis in the sukkah, kezayis of bread. Don't make a leish b'sukkah, and continue the meal inside. The Shaar Tshuva says it's not appropriate to wait so long. It's Yontif, and there's an issue of Simchas Yontif. Says the Shaar Tshuva, one should wait an hour or two, and if it's still raining, do as we just said. That's on the first night of Yontif. On the second night of Yontif, if somebody comes home from shul and it's raining, he can make Kiddush immediately and eat indoors. However, the halach is that if it's still raining by the time he comes to the end of the meal, he should take a kezayis of challah, eat it in the sukkah, make without again making a leish b'sukkah. There's an interesting ritva who we don't paskin like. The ritva says that this halacha about raining is not only when it's raining, but even if someone comes home, again, we're not talking about the first night of Yontif. If someone comes and sees that it's going to rain, it's imminent to rain, says the Ritva, one doesn't have to go into the sukkah. However, the Das Torah quotes the Ratvaz, and he says all the poskim disagree with this Ritva, and certainly if it's not raining right now, one is obligated to eat in the sukkah. So the Mishnah taught us, Moshlema Adavadoima, what could repair if it's raining on Sukkot, as if the Balabas poured water on the Eved's face. Iboiluhu, so in an understanding the Moshel, and as the Tveres Yisrael says, what's the point of the Mishnah telling us a Moshel? Says the Tveres Yisrael, usually a Moshel is if there's a concept which is difficult to understand, the Moshel helps us understand the concept. Here says the Tveres Yisrael, the Moshel, the concept is not a difficult concept to understand. The point, however, is that one should understand how serious of a matter it is if it's Chas V'Shalom raining on Sukkot. So how do we understand the Moshel? Ibarlu, mi shafach l'mi, who spilled the water? Did the master spill the water on the servant, or the servant spilled the water on the master? Tashma, the Tanya shofach loy Rabbi Kitan Alponov. It's as if the master spilled a pitcher on the face of the Eved. And he tells him, I don't want your work. So the Rashba asks, what's the difference in understanding this, in understanding the Moshel, who poured the water on whom? The point is that the water was spilled. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want our avoid. Says the Rashba, the Nafkamina is, if it's the Eved that poured the water on the master, then the halacha would be that even if the Eved wants to remain in the sukkah, he may not remain in the sukkah, because this is unacceptable avoida. However, if it's the owner, if it's the master that poured the water on the Eved, but the Eved says, I still want to remain in Eved, I still want to remain in the sukkah, then he may remain in the sukkah. And that is taka the minig that many people have, that even if it's raining, the Michsalazar speaks about it by Riches, and the Devichayim, the minig is known that the Devichayim was makbid, that even if it was raining, he sat in the sukkah, I want to remain an Eved of Hashem. And according to our understanding of the Gemara, it's very understandable. Why? However, the Mashag says that such behavior is only acceptable if it doesn't detract from the person's Simchas Yontif. If the person's Simchas Yontif will be affected by remaining in the rain, he should not remain in the sukkah. However, the Mefarshim ask a number of fundamental shailas lahalacha. We learned that the sukkah, one cannot have hanor from a sukkah. A sukkah is compared to the Karban Chagiga. So when does a mitzvah to sit in the sukkah? So we can understand, the person is doing the mitzvah, but if it's raining, and there is no obligation to sit in the sukkah, how could someone sit in the sukkah? He's being nana from the sukkah, not when he's doing a mitzvah. So some of Farshim explain that when it's raining, the sukkah doesn't have the status of a sukkah. And since it doesn't have the status of a sukkah, you could sit in it. Another explanation I saw is that when the Mishnah, the Gemara taught us that the sukkah is compared to Karban Chagiga, and we're now out of Anor from the sukkah, it means by diminishing the Kedusha, by diminishing the sukkah. But when one sits in the sukkah when it's raining, he's not diminishing the sukkah in any way. He's not taking anything, he's not ruining the sukkah, and therefore he may sit in the sukkah even though it's raining. Similar question is asked, why isn't there a problem about Taisif? If there's no obligation to sit in the sukkah when it's raining, wouldn't it be about Taisif when someone is sitting in the sukkah when it's raining? But again, as we've explained, about Taisif is when somebody's doing a mitzvah. For example, we're supposed to wear tefillin, and the tefillin is supposed to have four boxes, so if someone wears tefillin with five boxes, he's transgressing about Taisif. But now is not a time for sukkahs. It's like sitting in the sukkah in the middle of the winter. That would not be considered about Taisif, and therefore one may sit in the sukkah if he wants to when it's raining. Tanur Rabbanan, Bezman Shacham Aloika, when the sun is stricken, that means when there's an eclipse, and there's a fundamental machloikis in understanding this Gemara. Some of Farshim say that our Gemara is referring to a situation that something extraordinary happened. And the Gemara is teaching us that if something extraordinary happens to one of the planets, it's a proof that the Klal Yisrael, as we're going to learn, has to do tshuva. Yet other Mefarshim say that even if it's a normal planetary situation, the eclipse could be predicted when there'll be an eclipse. The fact that something like that happens, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world that way, it's occasion for us to understand that we have to do tshuva. Simra l'chol olam kulay. It's a bad sign for the entire world. Moshlema adav adayma. To what can this be compared? L'melech bas v'adam sh'asa sudal avodav. Like a king who made a banquet for his servants. V'niach panis l'fnei. He put in front of them a lamp. Kosalayim, when he gets angry at them, Vamal Avodai, Til Panas Bipneim, take away the lamp, Veshivim Bechayshach. So too, as the sun, so to speak, gets clouded up, that means HaKadosh Baruch is sending us a message that he doesn't want our Avodah. Tanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi says, Kol Zman Shemaris Loikim, when the planets, when the sun are stricken, Simral is the name of Yisrael. It's a bad sign for Klal Yisrael, Neshimul Modem Mekesehem, because Jews are accustomed to punishment. Usually, when there's tsaros in the world, who are the ones that are the one that get hurt by the punishments? Klal Yisrael. So, if there's punishment coming to the world, we are the ones that should be concerned. Marshal Seifer, it can be compared to a teacher of students, Shabala Mesa Seifer, who comes to school, Rutsur Beyodai, with a strap in his hand. Midoik, who's the one that has the most to worry? Mi Shiroga Lilkais, Bechal Yoim Vyoim, the one who gets punished every day, who doi? As the Mefarshim explain, the Talmud, who is a good Talmud and can learn, he's the Talmud that has the most to worry, because the Rebbe says it's worth investing into him, because he's the Talmud that has the potential. The Talmud that the Rebbe doesn't see any potential in, he doesn't put any effort into. Klal Yisrael, who can and should do tshuva, that's the one that the message is being sent to. Tana Rabbanan, Bezman Shacham Aloika, when the sun is stricken, Simra Alav the Kechavim. It's a bad sign for the Goyim, because the Goyim count according to the solar year. Levon Aloika, when the moon is stricken, Simra Alav Sinesh Yisrael, it's a bad sign for the Jews, because we count according to the moon. And that's why the Kedusha Slavi explains, the Gemara says, Lehoya Yom Tov Yisrael, the one greater Yom Tov for Klal Yisrael, K'chamish Shabbos Ba'av, like 15 days in Av, Shabbai Pasku Atzmaracha. What's 15 in Av? Because on 15 in Av, the sun gets weaker. And the sun getting weaker represents the Goyim, because the Goyim count to the sun. That's why it's a great Yom Tov for Klal Yisrael. And I saw from the Bava Rebbe that why do we Jews count to the moon? So he says, what makes a person a Talmud Chacham is someone who's willing to learn from a Rebbe. the attitude of Klal Yisrael is supposed to be in Merishonin Kamalochim, that the previous generations are like Malochim, like angels. Then Anu Kubnei Adam, then we're people. The moon doesn't have its own light. It only reflects light from the sun. So that's why Klal Yisrael counts to the moon, because the moon is like, is what the lesson of what Klal Yisrael should be, that we count from, we don't have our own light, we should always be following the path of the previous generations. Nature Yisrael, Mana Milvana, Klal Yisrael count to the moon, and the Goyim count to the sun. Loike b'mizrach, if the sun is stricken while it's on the east side, simaral l'yoshvi mizrach, it's a bad sign for the people who live on the east. B'mariv, if it gets stricken when it's on the west side, simaral l'yoshvi mariv, it's a bad sign for the people who live in the west. B'emtzerikia, if it gets stricken while it's in the middle of the sky, simaral l'cholaylam kula, it's a bad sign for the entire world. Pun of daimim l'dam, if its face is similar to blood, cherubal oilam, it's a sign that there's going to be a sword, there's going to be people killed in the world. Lesak, if it looks dark, like the color of a sack, chitzei rabon oilam, it means that there'll be a famine in the world. Lezul, if it has both of these shades, a reddish and a dark shade, cherub v'chitzei rabon oilam, there'll be sword and hunger in the world. Lokav k'nesosai, if the sun is stricken as a sunset, pranishai lovai, it means that the punishment will be delayed in coming. But siyasa, if the sun is stricken when it comes out, memeheris lovai, it's a sign that's going to come quickly. And some say just the opposite. So I saw from the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi explains that when Paroi had his dreams, that Yosef came to explain. So the dream, Paris said he had the dream twice. The dream was seen twice. Explains the Beis Halevi. What pshat that it was seen twice? On one hand, as we just learned in the Gemara, if the dream came right away at the beginning of the night, that means that the punishment is coming right away. However, we know that the Gemara also says that dreams that are seen at the beginning of the night are not that meaningful, could they just really reflect what the person thought about during the day. On the other hand, a dream that comes in the morning is more realistic, but on the other hand, the message is that it'll take time. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to send the message that the dream is a real dream, it's going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. That's why he had the dream come to Paroi twice. Once at the beginning of the night, to show that it's coming soon, and once in the morning, to show that it's a real dream, it's not just what he thought about during the day. There is no nation in the world that gets punished, that it's God. Rashi says that every nation has a God, has a master, a malach in the Shemayim that controls it, that its malach is not hurt. Nefarshim say, why do we say it means the malach? Maybe it means their avodah zarah, because it also refers to Klal Yisrael. Now normally Klal Yisrael are under the dominion of Hashem. Only when they do aveiris do HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us over to malachim. So when Klal Yisrael do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, they don't have to worry about all these things. So says Hashem, don't learn to act in the ways of the Goyim, and you will not have to be worried about the signs in the heaven. Only the Goyim have to worry about them. The Jews do not have to worry about it. Tan Rabbanan says the Gemara, "Bishvil arba dvarim, because of four things, chama loika, the sun is stricken. Al abez nishmes, if the rav dies, then in nisbet kalocha, and he's not properly mourned, he's not properly eulogized." And the Mefarshim explain what's the limit. The limit is that the pasuk says that v'zarach hashemesh uva hashemesh, referring the pasuk tells us that says the sun goes down and the sun comes up. So, explain the Mefarshim, that when the sun goes down and a person realizes that the sun goes down, he becomes worthy that the sun should come up. If the Talmud Chacham dies, and it bothers the people of the town that they lost this great Talmud Chacham, then they begin, they learn their lesson, and they are worthy of having another Talmud Chacham live in their midst. However, if the people of the town say, this Talmud Chacham passes away, there'll be another Talmud Chacham, then there will be another Talmud Chacham. But that Talmud Chacham will not live in their town. The Talmud Chacham will live elsewhere, and it'll be like the sun no longer shines in their city. Vanara Marasa, a betrothed woman, should talk of an ear that was being raped, Vemishila, and nobody took care of her. So Aruch HaNer explains that normally, at night, if a woman is attacked, Chas V'Shalom, nobody hears, because it's night, everybody's home. But during the day, people are there to help her. And if during the day a woman is attacked and nobody helps her, so they treated the day like the night. If they treated the day like the night, then the day ends up looking like the night, it becomes dark. V'amishka Zachar, if there's a homosexuality, and the Mefarshim explain, because that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created that the world should work in a certain way with the sun shining, and that this is a deviant behavior. So if somebody acts in a deviant manner, the world doesn't act in a normal manner with the sun coming up in the proper time. Vashnei Achim Shenishkim Damar Ka'echad, two brothers whose blood is spilled at the same time, which again, and the Mefarshim say that originally the sun and the moon were supposed to shine together. Two brothers are supposed to live together, and if they don't live together, then the sun doesn't come up. For four reasons, the stars take away the power. A kosher plaster, people who write forged documents, on midei sheker, on people who give false testimony, the megadli behem medaka b'Eretz Yisrael, people who raise small livestock in Eretz Yisrael, which Chazal said is osur, because they're difficult to watch, the kotzei learners toivos, and people who cut down good trees. All of these things cause that there should not be, that the star should not shine properly. And the morale explains that why is there such a punishment for these actions. Explains the morale that the sun is something, that the stars bring light to the world, which is something real. When these people who do all these actions, which take away from a normal, good working environment, living environment, that's why there aren't stars that will give light. The Pesukim can discuss, based on this Gemara, the issue that one may never cut down a tree that gives fruit. However, the Pesukim say that if there's a specific good reason to cut down such a tree, the Binyan Tzion discusses an interesting shaila. He says that in his country, that there was a rule that if no one was allowed to get married unless they had a house prepared. So he speaks about, let's say the only place where somebody could build a house is where there's a tree. May one cut down the tree in order to build a house to get married? He says if there's a reason to do it, you may cut down such a tree. However, other pious can say one should be extremely careful in avoiding cutting down a tree, and they explain it should only be cut down if the tree will be replanted elsewhere, and when it's replanted, it should be replanted with all the earth that was around the tree. Another etz that Chassam Sofer gives is to sell the tree to a guy, and that the guy should then cut down the tree. It's not a Jew cutting down the tree. V'shvil abed varim, for four reasons, nichsei balbatim nimsaron l'malchus. The property, people's property is given over to the authorities. Amash ishtar pronis, people hold on to paid up loan documents, which could come to used improperly to collect the loan again. Almalve beribis, people who lend with interest. Val shahaya sipik biyadim limchos flamichai, people who could protest but not protest. People who are wealthy have influence. If they don't take advantage of that, they deserve to be punished. And people who pledge money to tzaddok in public and do not give. And the Mashal explains why. He says, because what happens sometimes is that there's a need for tzaddokah. So if a group of people get together to raise money for a specific charity need, and if somebody promises money for that need, so they think that we raise the amount that we need and we don't have to raise any more. Then when this person doesn't pay his pledge, the amount needed will never have been met. And again, the Pesach can specify that the Gemara is specifically concerned when it's done barabim, when it's done in public, because that is extremely misleading. Menches Yitzchak, based on this Gemara, says lahalocha, that sometimes appeals are made in shul, and that somebody may want to say that he's giving more money to the cause that there's an appeal being made for, in order that should get other people to give more money. Says the Miches Yitzchak, based on this Gemara, that it's certainly improper to do. Our Gemara speaks about a paiskei tzedakah barabim, people who pledge to give tzedakah ve'einan noisnim, and do not give what they were pledged. Amarav, b'shvil arba dvarim, nichsei ba'albatim yoytzen l'tmiyim. For four reasons, people's property are destroyed. Somebody who withholds the payment of the laborer. And as Mefarshim explained, even though he ultimately will pay it, but if he doesn't pay it on time, those who steal, cheat their workers, people who take the yoke of responsibility from their necks and put on somebody else's, and somebody who's arrogant because he's wealthy. And arrogance, k'neged kulam, is the worst. Avav v'anovim, people who are humble, k'siv, the pasuk says, in Tehillim, v'anovim yirshu aretz, the people who are humble will inherit the earth, v'sangul v'roiv sholem, and they will be delight in having peace. Hadron aloch, hayoshin tachas amito, hadron aloch hayoshin tachas amito, hadron aloch hayoshin tachas amito. Our next perek, perek Lulav Hagozel, begins to discuss the halachas of the Dalad Minim. And the first of the Minim that our Mishnah will discuss is the Lulav. Mefarshim explained the why is the Lulav discussed first versus all the other Minim, because the Lulav is the Min which we have all the other Minim together with it. We have the Lulav Aravos v'Hadasim. That's why it's kept together. Other Mefarshim explain because the Esrig is the Min that has the most halachas, as we will learn in our Perek, and therefore that was saved to discuss last. The Dalan Minim, the Sefer Achinuch explains, represents, since Sukkot is the Chag HaOsif, it's the Yontif where they used to bring their produce into the field, into the homes, and the Torah is teaching us that when somebody brings his produce into his home, he should realize that everything we have is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and use those produce to thank Hashem. And the Chinuch continues to explain that the different minim look like different parts of the human body, the lesson being that all of our Avarim, our entire bodies, should be subservient to Avodas Hashem. Says the Mishnah, Lulav HaGozel, a lulav which was stolen, Vayovish, or one that is dry, Pasul, is invalid. The Mefarshim point out that the Mishnah, by comparing Lulav HaGozel Vayovish, that when it's dry and stolen, just like a lulav that's stolen remains permanently disqualified. So let's say somebody stole a lulav, and then ultimately he pays the person whom he stole it from. That lulav, since it was stolen, remains disqualified, and same thing with halach would be on a lulav that's dried, even if somehow chemically one could reverse the dryness, and it should not be dry anymore. It once it became dry, it remains pasul. There is a machlaikis amongst Rishonim what is considered dry. Some Rishonim say that if it becomes so dry that it's like a fingernail, that it crumbles, that's when it's considered dry. Others say that the Ravid says that it's very unlikely that a lulav should become that dry, and when it just becomes dry, that it loses its greenish color, that is already considered dry. The reason a lulav hayavish, a dried lulav, is disqualified, for Rashi says, because it's no longer beautiful. But as a machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, what does that mean? Rashi explains, because the Torah says, Ze keli vanveyu, mitzvahs should be performed in a beautiful manner, so lulav which is dried out is not Ze keli vanveyu. Tosfos disagrees, because Tosfos says that Ze keli vanveyu, although a mitzvah should be performed in such a manner, it doesn't disqualify a mitzvah for that reason. Therefore, Tosfos says, since the Torah uses the word hadar by an esrig, that an esrig must be beautiful, says Tosfos that we learn that all the dalaminim have to be hadar, they have to be beautiful, and if the lulav is dried out, it lacks in the requirement of being hadar. The Kabbalist Tamarim says that perhaps there is no machlokes Rashi in Tosfos. What Rashi is saying is, why is there a halacha by the lulav that has to be beautiful, that we apply to it the pasuk of Zekeli Vanveyu, because the Torah says the word hadar. The Stipler says, in answer to Tosfos' question on Rashi, that Zekeli Vanveyu is not essential to the performance of a mitzvah. He says it depends what the hadar affects. If the hadar is in the actual mitzvah, like our Gemara, where the lulav is dried, so the lulav is not a nice lulav, then beautiful is an essential requirement. If, on the other hand, it's not part of the essential part of the mitzvah, for example, the lulav has to be tied together with the other minim, that makes it beautiful, but that doesn't affect the actual lulav, then we don't apply the halacha of Zekeli Vanveyu. Shel Asheira, a lulav which is an Asheira, which is an Avodah Zarah, or Shel Er Nidachas, if most of the city of Klal Yisrael serve an Avodah Zarah, everything in the city has to be burnt, that's called an Er Nidachas, that too is possible. Again, the reason is because since it has to be burnt, it kol oimid lisarif kesarif dami, anything that's supposed to be burnt is already considered in a halacha as if it is burnt, and therefore it doesn't have the proper shear. Niktam roishan, if the top of the lulav was clipped off, which we see in diagram 154 on page 52. And actually, there's a machloikus rishonim, which part of the lulav does the Mishnah refer to when it says the top is cut off? The Rashi says that when the top is cut off, it's no longer hadar. Because the lulav has three parts to it. It has the shedra, which is the spine, the alum, which are the leaves, and the tiyomis, which is the top twin leaf. The spine is the green core, which runs up the center of the lulav, and the leaves grow out of the spine, which that is most of the lulav. So now, and then every leaf of the lulav is actually a double leaf. And now there's a machloikis, what is considered the top of the lulav. The Ravid holds that the Mishnah is referring to the spinal core of the lulav. The tip of the spine must be intact, but our Mishnah is not referring to the leaves. The Tor, quoting the Rosh, says that the upper leaves of the lulav are considered its top. If the majority of the upper leaves break, the lulav is possible. The Ran and the Mega Mishnah hold that the top of the leaf, the lulav, we're referring to the top of the tiyomis, which this is the Pesach of Tosfos also. The Ramah paskins like the Ran and the Magid Mishnah, but the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rosh. Nifritzu Aleph, if its leaves were torn, as seen in diagram 155, Pasul, it's invalid. That means even if the leaves are torn and then somebody takes another leaf and ties it together, the lulav remains pasul. Nifridu aleph. If its leaves are separated, kosher, it's kosher. Diagram 156. This refers to lulav that leaves are attached to the spine but are spread apart like the branches of a tree. Because as the lulav matures, its leaves spread out and become spread out. And here the Mishnah is teaching us that we tie it together, the lulav is kosher. Yehuda says, Yagdena Mamala, one should tie it together at the top. If the leaves are spread apart, one should tie them to the spine so they hug together like the leaves of an ordinary lulav. Tzine Harbazo, the lulavim of the Iron Mountain, Kshiris. These are palm trees that grew in a special section of Eretz Yisrael, whose branches have short leaves that do not match the length of the shedra of the spine of the lulav, and it may be used as a lulav. This is diagram 157. Lulav sheyesh by shloish tefachim, a lulav that has the length of three tefachim, kedei la'aneiboy, so it's long enough to shake, kosher, it's kosher. The Gemara, as we're going to learn, will explain that we do nanuim, we shake the lulav, and the halacha is that the lulav, when shaken, should be the minim, that dasim and aravos that are tied together the lulav are three tefachim, so the lulav should be one tefach longer that we should be able to shake the lulav above the hadasim and aravos. And it's interesting that the mefarshim point out that even though midaraisa there is no obligation to do the nanuim, still the halacha is that the lulav should have this shear that we should be able to do the nanuim.